The next matter is City of Seattle versus 2009 Cadillac CTS.
Good morning, Your Honor. If it pleases the court, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes.
2 minutes, okay.
As this court knows, forfeitures are not favored, and they should only be enforced when they are strictly followed, both to the spirit of the law and the letter of the law. And the courts have held that absent exigent circumstances, that it requires that the government to afford each claimant notice and a meaningful opportunity to be heard. I'm here to argue both of those, notice and a meaningful opportunity to be heard. The first is with regards to RCW 69.505, 50.505, subsection 3, where they define commencement. And despite that clear definition over and over again in the lower courts, at the administrative level, and at the superior court level, we have them ignoring when commencement occurs. And it is defined clearly. It says, proceedings for the forfeitures shall be deemed commenced by the seizure. There's no question when this starts, when commencement occurs.
When did the adjudicative hearing commence?
According to the city or myself, according to me and my client, it commenced when they took his property. When they came and they took his car, his phone.
No, the hearing commenced.
The hearing commenced 105 days after the actual.
You're working off the June 2nd.
Correct.
Hearing date. What about the Washington cases that say we follow the APA, and the hearing commences as soon as notice is given?
Well,
the hearing will occur, which would be April 15th, and here within 90 days.
I would think that that would be a true hazard if we follow that for two reasons. First, the 69.50 is not silent, and it's only when 69.50 is silent that we should fall back onto the APA. Second of all, the APA deals with terminating government benefits, changing government regulations, and assessing fines.
You're then asking us to overturn Escamilla and
Here's why, though.
Okay.
Because under their theory, all they have to do is not actually have a hearing, but simply tell my client that they're going to have a hearing. Under those two cases, that is the only thing that the court is holding the city to do, is say, just let them know you're going to have a hearing, not when you're going to have a hearing. If you're going to have a hearing on a particular date, just let them know that a hearing is going to occur. Under those two cases, that's all the more that the APA requires.
Under Black, Chevrolet, Corvette, though, isn't your argument then addressed to, your hypothetical addressed to, well, if you tell me you're going to have a hearing, well, that might technically start it under the APA, but if you blow me off and actually never get to the hearing, then I'm in a bad place. Isn't the answer to that the balancing test that we're going to look at for delays in the proceeding?
And again, I would go back to Televic that told us that there is not a balancing test. There's a 90-day, and Black Corvette doesn't actually override. Brewitt was filed a year after Black Corvette. But what it does is that what they're asking for is a balancing test, and what I don't see is equity. They want a 45-day deadline statutorily. In 45 days, if I don't file a right to a claim, that property is deemed forfeited. On the 46th day, if I show up and I want to remove this from having it in front of the chief of police or somebody hired by the chief of police as a hearing examiner, I don't get to do that. On the 46th day, I've lost that opportunity. The city wants hard deadlines for every single one of the statutories, but when it comes to what Televic is supposed to be read into the statute itself, there's a 90-day deadline for a full adjudicative hearing, and they want a balancing test. Where is the balancing test for the 46th day? It's not there. Why? Because it's in the statute. Why should we suddenly read into a balancing test for them for a strict 90-day deadline that was provided to us by Televic?
How about the amendment in Televic 1 where they withdrew the opinion, took out the reference to the date of seizure, and just put in a reference to the statute, including the APA statute? Doesn't that signal the Supreme Court in Televic 1 was saying, we're not going to start the clock from seizure. We're going to start the clock from notice of claim.
Certainly, that would be the city's argument. It wouldn't be mine. And what I saw and what the reading was,
right,
in my
right.
was that they removed real property to signify it's not just real property, but all property. And that's what that editing, that's what that editing signified. And what the city is asking you to do is ignore an actual statute that tells us when the proceedings are supposed to occur, and instead take a condition precedent, which is if the claimant files a claim. And they're asking you to say, well, now that we've said if the claimant files a claim, that's the new commencement date. Simply ignore when the legislature told you commencement starts, which is within 90 days from when they seize the property. Instead, let's read into Televic. And you have to read between the lines in order to accomplish that goal. You have to say, well, that condition precedent and that editing actually meant that's when commencement occurred. But that's not what it says. With going back to the second part of one of the arguments that we've presented as well, has to do with notice and the several changes that have occurred over the years to the actual statute itself. And what we do have is a real problem here with people that are getting these notices for forfeitures, whether they're innocent owners or the actual claimants. What we're getting is a document that says you have 45 days to respond, and that's it. Now, the city will tell you that all the process that they've ever provided is all the process that's due to my client and anybody else. And in some sense, they're right. And that's why we're here, is for the court to add the additional due process, because it doesn't happen by virtue of the statute itself. And just like Televic, there's an opportunity for us to look at the notice that the city provided and ask ourselves, are we really providing proper notice to these people? If I get a traffic ticket, at least I get a box to check that I can have a magistrate, an unattached magistrate, hear my case. Here, I get nothing. I get essentially references to three different statutes, none of which actually explain that my rights are there, but rather what rights the city had. In other words, the city says, well, we will cite you to these three different statutes, but that's the authority that we're using to take away your property. And other than that, they do not let the litigant know or the claimant know that on the 46th day, if you want to have this matter removed, you've lost that opportunity. And so it's these things that the claimant should know, the RCWs that they need to know in order to be able to have proper notice. And that is a due process issue that we did raise first time on appeal and for which an administrative judge shouldn't have been deciding in the first place. And so there is a question whether this notice, this statutory notice, when we're dealing with a quasi-civil, quasi-criminal matter, whether we're actually properly identifying and giving these people the proper information to identify what their rights are, because there is no due process in the reading of that. And I'm ignoring, mind you, the fact that they actually misstate the law in their actual claim and say it's 45 days from the date of seizure that they have, when in actuality the law had already changed in those claims and they had 45 days from the date that they received the notice. What I am saying, though, is that the notice itself, in its reading, when you read the exhibit, does not provide the due process needed. I will reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Very well. You'll have 2 minutes.
May it please the court. Michael Ryan with the Seattle City Attorney's Office. Mr. White received all the process that he was due. The forfeiture hearing in this case complied with both the statutory scheme and constitutional procedural due process. A full and complete hearing was had in this case within 78 days after Mr. White notified the city of his interest in the seized property. This is plainly constitutional and in compliance with the statute. Under the Televic cases, this court's case in Black Corvette, Escamilla, and this court's more recent unpublished decision, which we cited as supplemental authority in the Urquhart-Mendel case, the 90-day period that concerned the Televic court does not begin to run until a claimant notifies the seizing agency of an interest in the property. And this makes sense given the way the statute is structured. It must be read as a unitary whole. You go in and you seize property. Then you have to give notice. Then you wait to see if someone claims an interest in the property. If nobody claims an interest in the property, after 45 days, it is by law forfeited. And if someone makes a claim, that's when that 90-day trigger that concerned Televic, that's when that kicks in. Here we're well within that statutory requirement that Televic essentially read into the statute. Moreover, there's nothing for purposes of constitutional procedural due process that's magical for 90 days. I mean, due process is a flexible standard, not a rigid standard. The Supreme Court has made that clear time and time again.
And so where are we when we read Black Chevrolet Corvette? does that case set out a clear definition of the timelines, or does it just say we're going to go with follow the lead from the U.S. Supreme Court, we're just going to go with a balancing test, and you consider a bunch of four factors and decide if due process has been denied?
Well, I think there's two questions there. The first question is, what's the triggering event that requires the, you know, because remember, Televic read the 90-day requirement into the statute, and Your Honor was talking about that amendment, and I think that amendment or the change in the opinion that they made, they took out the phrase of the seizure of real property. So they took out the word seizure and also of real property, making clear that it applied to, I believe, personal property as well as real property. But in addition, they took out the seizure language. But importantly, they also added a citation to RCW 3405-419, which, as you know, is the APA, which then has that 90-day period in it. That was also part of the amendment that they made. They added in that provision. So it takes you to the APA. So the triggering event from which that 90-day needs to run is when a notice of claim is filed, and here it's undisputed.
So then the portion of Black Corvette that talks about we're adopting the balancing test, not just for delays midstream, but from to determine whether there's been a denial of due process from when you started, is dicta? Is not?
No, I wouldn't say it's dicta, because I think there's two questions. There's, are you complying with the statute with the gloss that Televic placed over it? And then there's the question of what's the constitutional requirement for due process. Now, remember, with respect to...
But the gloss is solely to satisfy due process. How can you say we've got a rigid standard for due process and we also have a balancing test and they complement each other?
No, I mean, I think what Black Corvette is getting at, because you have to also remember the nature of the claims at issue in the various cases. Here, if you were to apply that balancing test. Now, we believe that the statutory structure says the triggering date, that the 90 days would be triggered by the date of claim, and we've met that in this case. It's undisputed. Now, if you wanted to do a separate and independent due process analysis, right, look, for example, at the United States Supreme Court case in $8,850 in U.S. currency, where they effectively adopted the Barker v. Wingo test from the speedy trial right, and there was an 18-month delay before the proceedings even started, because in federal court, the proceedings themselves are basically the filing of a complaint. Here we have a different process for forfeiture. But in that case, an 18-month delay was fine. But what the Supreme Court did say was that short delays are likely never going to raise a constitutional issue, and that's the key issue. And here, even if you're looking at it, they're saying what I believe Mr. White is saying is that 90 days is a hard and fast constitutional rule, period. And I don't think that that's correct under U.S. Supreme Court precedent for purposes of procedural due process, because you can point to several cases from the Ninth Circuit where the delay is 4 years, and that's not presumptively unreasonable. But then you have to get into the other factors, which are the length of the delay. Here, even accepting there was any delay, which we don't believe there was, it was 15 days, which is very short, and the Supreme Court said that wouldn't raise a constitutional issue. The reasons for the delay, here the reasons for the delay is that we believed we were complying with the statute. Defendant's assertion of a right to a hearing. Now, remember, in this case, the defendant didn't say, I need my hearing as soon as possible, and that was part of the issue in Escamilla, where they said, you know, you didn't raise this issue before that you needed to have this. And key thing is prejudice. And when they're talking about prejudice in this context, they're not talking about, well, I lost the property. What they're talking about is loss of witness memory, witnesses can't be located, that type of prejudice. Here, none of that exists. They haven't made a claim of prejudice, nor could they, because below, Mr. White did not challenge the propriety of the seizure itself. He did not challenge probable cause. The only defense he made before the hearing examiner was that it was not timely, and that was based on his view of the statute of subsection 3 of the forfeiture statute, that commencement means full adjudication within 90 days. But that, I don't think, is a constitutional requirement, and I think that this court's rulings in Black Corvette and the unpublished decision, which goes through this. I mean, today, I think Mr. White was very clear that they want you to overrule those cases. Now, we believe Televic supports our reading. But we also believe that Black Corvette and the Urquhart and Mendel case is directly on point. And I want to talk.
Is there a need for guidance?
I think there's a need to, I mean, maybe to the extent that there's a published opinion that explains this is how the statute functions and this is how it works, because if there is confusion, I don't think there is any confusion. I think that Televic answers this question, as we explained in our briefs. I think that Black Corvette answers this, and that's why I don't think that with respect to this issue, I know we're arguing about it because of, based on the plain language of the statute, but that's the exact same argument that at least a panel of this court in an unpublished order opinion back in January rejected, saying that, no, our cases do not hold that, and Televic basically brings us into the APA, which has that 90-day standard.
How about the lack of adequate notice?
Sure. I think, first off, Mr. White doesn't claim that we didn't follow the statutory procedure when it comes to notice. He's not saying that the state statute requires that the phrase, and you can remove it. Because remember, that's the focus of his claim, is that we didn't let this individual know specifically that he could remove it. And in this case, given the amount of controversy, the removal would have been to the district court, not to the superior court. And we don't think that that issue was proper. We know it wasn't raised before the hearing examiner. And we do know it was raised for the first time in the superior court, which was serving in an appellate capacity, and the superior court rejected that. So we don't believe that it's proper for this court to consider it. But if it does, I don't think that it violates procedural due process to not state specifically in the notice you have a right to remove, particularly in a case like this where, you know, I think part of the argument is that the whole scheme is unfair. It's unfair that the chief of police gets to designate someone who then has a hearing. But the reality is that that's the statutory structure that the Washington legislature has adopted. There is a right to appeal. In this case, Mr. White had an opportunity to go to the superior court and make these arguments, and they were not successful. He has a right to come here. I mean, there's a lot of process that goes into this. And at the end of the day, I think part of what he's arguing is that, you know, a lot of people are pro se or they don't have lawyers, and the removal process is confusing. But our statute specifically, or our notice, states the statute in bold. And someone can go and read that statute and determine that they have a right to remove. Now, what I don't understand is what the right to removal would have, how it would have been any different in this case. Because, again, he did not complain that there wasn't probable cause. He did not argue that the seizure was unlawful in any regard. It was simply a matter of timing. And so the suggestion that somehow this timing issue would have been different before the district court, when it was all then rejected by the superior court, I don't think it makes, I think under the facts of these case, due process does not require that the words, you can remove and here's how to do it, in the notice itself, because the statute doesn't require that. Unless the court has any further questions.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel.
And quickly, Your Honor, I just wanted to, if it pleases the court, reliance on federal cases and Ninth Circuit cases are really misguided, including the way, even as far as Black Corvette goes, because everything that we're dealing with is a statutory. So although there's some great language to fall back on, rely on, and listen to, none of it is really on point for what our statutes are, what our statutes have to say. And so this reliance on the Ninth Circuit and the federal court is, and I would also point out, especially when it comes to the notice matter, for the, again, under the federal rules, when you get a forfeiture, you have a box you can check where you can simply remove right to district court, as opposed to having it being heard at the administrative level. So none of the protections that are in CAFRA are here at the city level when it comes to the notice matter. And again, going back to this equation, this unbalanced equation, that the city wants the benefit of all of these deadlines to be written in stone. 45-day rule is written in stone for them, but they don't want to have to be bound by a 90-day rule. They want to fall back on the APA and say, as long as we give you notice any time in the 90-day period, we can keep your property indefinitely. And I really don't think that that's the way that the courts should go, and I don't think that that's the way that we want to go when we're taking people's livelihoods away. We're taking away their cars. We're taking away their bank accounts. We're taking away their computers. We're seizing all of this, not without a hearing. There's no probable cause hearing before they do this. At what point are we going to ask when they have to be answered for? At what point are they going to have to answer why they took this? Because they don't have to do it. They don't even have to get a search warrant to do this. They can come and seize. And that's all. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The next matter is Brandis versus Brand Insulation, Inc. While you're getting settled, I gather that everyone